Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by Jack Kane Ford. Find your next Ford Tough vehicle at caneford.com. Woodhill Community Center. Have a hand in the heart of the city. Support their mission with your donations at woodhillcommunitycenter.org. Toyota in Nicholasville Superstore. Online consultants are standing by right now to help you find your next Toyota. Visit Toyota on nicholasville.com. Lexus of Lexington, home of the best-selling Lexus IS. Find yours today at lexusoflexington.com. Introducing the redesigned CatholicSingles.com, featuring new ways that put the spotlight on the person and their faith, not just a profile picture. For the past 20 years, faithful Catholics have used CatholicSingles.com, and the reimagined CatholicSingles.com website is ready to help single Catholics take the next step in sharing meaningful relationships with other faithful Catholics. Remember, CatholicSingles.com for faith, fellowship, and love.
We're in the second week of our first series for the fall season, all about enough. Last week we talked about the idea of enough and how it's a question that haunts us, really. We wonder if we have enough, get enough, do enough, if we are enough. Success in life requires investing in so many different areas of life that it seems we can never achieve everything we want. Family, finances, fitness, faith, friends, work, and school. To do enough in all of these different areas seems like an impossible goal, and yet a necessary one if we're going to be judged successful. And while we're worrying about enough isn't even the right goal. All of these different areas are important to invest our time and energy and resources in for sure, but enough isn't even our goal, is it? I mean, think about it. You don't approach marriage with just enough commitment to avoid divorce. We're on the job, you don't put in just enough effort not to get fired. At school, you don't apply yourself just enough not to fail out. And while we're haunted by the goal of having enough isn't the goal. We focus our lives on enough, we're missing out on perhaps what is the real purpose of our life. And this is a purpose Jesus addresses in today's gospel. At one point in the Gospel of Mark, we read this. Jesus and his disciples set out for the village of Caesarea Philippi. And along the way, he asked them, "Who do people say I am?" So people are wondering about him. He's this great big personality, and he's fascinating and interesting, and people are talking about him. And here's some of the things they're saying. People say, "You're John the Baptist, others Elijah, others one of the prophets." In other words, there's lots of chatter on the street about you and lots of misunderstanding too. And then Jesus asks the question he's really interested in, "But who do you say I am?" It's an incredibly important question that every person who encounters the Lord and seeks to follow him must answer. We've got to answer it in two ways. We need to answer it objectively. Jesus stands out uniquely among all people in human history. He's the only person who claimed that he was God and wasn't crazy. Do you believe that objectively as a truth? We need to answer that question, and then we need to answer it personally. If Jesus really is the Savior of the world, then he's my Savior. If Jesus really is the Lord of heaven and earth, then he's my Lord. Do I believe that as a personal truth? I would argue the most important question we'll ever ask and answer is exactly this question. You know, if you're here today and you're not a Christian or you're not really a religious person, we're glad you're here. Our goal as a church is to create an environment that makes it easier for you to consider this question. It's the question that Jesus poses to his disciples. And Peter's the first one to speak, as is often the case, and he gets it exactly right. He says, "You are the Christ. You are the Messiah." And then Jesus warned them not to tell anyone. Why did he do that? Well, because their understanding of the Messiah is not well informed. In fact, it's misinformed. They don't know what it means that Jesus is the Messiah. They still associate that term with political or military meaning, that he's going to instigate some kind of revolution and establish himself as king. Jesus' mission had nothing to do with that, as he goes on to explain. He began to teach them that the Son of Man must suffer greatly and be rejected by the elders and the chief priests and the scribes and be killed and rise after 3 days. Then Peter took him aside and began to rebuke him. At this, he turned and rebuked Peter, saying, "Get behind me, Satan. You are thinking not as God does, but as human beings do." Peter doesn't want to hear the reality of what it really means for Jesus to be the Christ, which Jesus goes on to explain for them. "Whoever wishes to come after me must deny himself, take up his cross, and follow me. For whoever wishes to save his life will lose it. But whoever loses his life for my sake and for the sake of the gospel will save it." When we find ourselves focused on the issue of having enough, doing enough, being enough, it's precisely this purpose that we're losing sight of. Our real goal is to follow the Lord. He's our leader. He's our guide. He's our shepherd. He's in charge. Like Peter, we can have that right 1 minute and then lose sight of it the next. So we've got to be reminded over and over again. And following isn't a passive spectator sport or a consumer exercise like a lot of people approach church. To follow the Lord means to go where he's going. And ultimately, that's to the cross. And that sounds difficult and challenging for sure, and sometimes it is. But it's better than the alternative, in which we worry about making life work out for us all alone and on our own, focused on enough. Following the Lord means going to the cross. And the cross is more than enough. You know, originally we had planned this weekend to be a very different kind of weekend. It's our 50th anniversary, and we planned a celebration. We worked on it all summer, and then as the summer unfolded, it became increasingly clear that this is not a time for celebration. It's a time for, I don't know what, reflection, I suppose. All of us, in our different ways, have struggled and continue to struggle with the alarming, terrible news currently coming at us on a daily basis regarding the larger church community. My own initial statement on this subject is available on our website or out on the concourse. I invite you to take a look at it. I say some pretty strong things in it, and I've got more to say. The blockbuster denunciation of the Pope and many prominent churchmen by a former high-ranking Vatican official recently is an astounding portrait of dysfunction and corruption among some church elites. Earlier this summer, the unfolding scandal involving the former Archbishop of Washington, jaw-dropping as it was, only served as an entr'acte to the Pennsylvania grand jury's revelations of decades of criminal abuse and cover-up by hundreds of priests and dozens of diocesan officials, including bishops. These matched with similar scandals unfolding in Ireland, Chile, Australia, just this week, Germany. What we are witnessing has been called by commentators a change of era in the whole long history of the Catholic Church, the biggest development since the Protestant Reformation, or simply a catastrophe. The first response is probably a visceral, emotional one. And I get that. We understand that. We're actually interested in hearing from you. And so following Mass today, members of our leadership team will be available in the colonnade off the concourse for one-on-one listening sessions. Tell us what you're thinking and feeling. We'll be taking notes and forming those notes into a report that I'll be handing personally to Archbishop Laurie on Tuesday. tell us what you'd like us to tell him. Later today, members of our parish financial council will be hosting a meeting to provide accountability and transparency when it comes to our parish finances and exactly where your money goes. You have a right to know. And if you attend that meeting, I think you'll be very pleased with where your money is going at this church. Everybody is welcome to attend. Beyond whatever initial response we register can be another response, a prayerful response, especially on behalf of victims. That's why we're offering Eucharistic adoration throughout this weekend in our chapel. We can pray for healing and wholeness, and then match our prayer with rededication to the highest standards when it comes to the safety and protection of children and youth at this church. Our church maintains standards far in excess of what civil or archdiocesan procedures require. We have, in fact, three staff who are daily dedicated to oversight of these procedures and have built up a whole ministry team of volunteers to assist them in this enormous project. In addition, I am now appointing an independent board of oversight chaired by parishioner and attorney Kathleen Berain to review compliance moving forward. That board will report directly to the parish council president, Jeff Roddinghouse, who will ensure that we maintain 100% compliance 100% of the time as we have in the past. Hopefully, all of this is helpful. Meanwhile, one is left to wonder what else is out there. We've heard from six dioceses, and for sure we've heard enough. If ever enough was enough, we're there. But have we heard it all? It is not credible to suppose that the same patterns of abuse and cover-up that were so widespread for so long in Pennsylvania and Massachusetts would not be found elsewhere. And there are 190 other dioceses in this country. Attorney generals across the country are currently forming grand jury investigations of their own. All crimes must be investigated and prosecuted, however long and painful that process becomes. But meanwhile, we're left to wonder, is this the new normal? I'm afraid it is. And if it is, many parishes already in decline cannot possibly withstand the storm of indefinite revelations. Obviously, the impact on mass attendance and offertory income will surely be debilitating. And on the morale of clergy and lay staff, the cost is even higher. But the highest cost of all will be the lost faith of the faithful. Surely in this scenario, thousands of parishes will close. And I'm left wondering about the path forward for the rest of us. For the larger church, it's not so simple. There are just now many bishops sincerely offering various proposals, and the Pope has called for an extraordinary meeting of bishops. But there are also many reasonable voices wondering how the class of people who brought us to this point can chart the path forward. Fair question, to be sure. And while we're currently blessed in this diocese with our own bishops, at least I think so, trust in the national leadership of the church is increasingly lacking. And what really is the problem that they're trying to address anyway? Nobody seems to agree on that. It's all over the place. The abuse of children, the abuse of teenagers, mostly teenage boys, systemic cover-up that shielded abusers and placed other youth at risk, institutional fraud, organized ecclesial crime. These are all crimes that are part of this scandal, to be sure, but they're all different kinds of crimes. How do they fit together? How do you make any sense out of it? What do they have in common? Well, there are plenty of commentators who would disagree with me on this point for sure, and I know it. But here's what I think. What all of these crimes have in common is a common culture. And I would call it the culture of clericalism. What is clericalism? Well, it's not good, for sure. It's putting religion above people. It's an excessive devotion to the institutional aspects of religion, over and above the faith and the faithful. And it includes all kinds of bad stuff. It usually includes cronyism and inbreeding, cloistered Byzantine political environments, self-indulgence, and self-serving policies. And here's the point, don't miss this. In such environments, in a culture of clericalism, corruption, and criminal behavior easily breed, excess is accepted, it's promoted, it's rewarded, and at its worst, it leads to perversity, which can be permitted, as we have seen. Everything that has been revealed in this crisis happened in and to some extent, I would say to a large extent, because of the culture of clericalism. If the church is to avert disaster, clericalism must be identified in all its forms and rooted out. And this is an imperative you, the laity, can advance by demonstrating your sheer intolerance for it whenever and wherever you encounter it moving forward. Meanwhile, we priests should instead commit to a renewal of every aspect of our priestly lives, especially through increased faithfulness to the promises that we made at ordination. A lifestyle characterized by simplicity and humility would be especially helpful moving forward. Pastors and bishops alike must commit to the restoration of the laity, men and women, to their proper role as baptized Christians within the church. Every level of administration and leadership, short of sacramental service, should be open to qualified candidates. More and more, they, not clergy, should be leading our parishes. This can happen immediately. No revision of canon law or development of doctrine needed. Bishops must work to reduce unnecessary bureaucratic structures currently strangling our parishes, including those originating with the diocese themselves. Perhaps it is time that they take up their primary role as pastors, living in their cathedral parishes, attending to their parish and their parishioners there, and from that platform, not corporate offices, serving as attentive fathers to the other pastors in their diocese. The church as a whole needs to accept the reality that clergy abuse is a global plague that can only be eliminated by establishing universal safeguards resembling those that were adapted by the U.S. bishops in 2002. Safeguards, by the way, and here's a piece of good news, that have been everywhere successful. In the last 16 years, there has not been a single instance of credible child abuse by a priest. It is time to reform the way bishops are selected, with a transparent consultative process that seeks to promote loving and wise pastors, not canon lawyers. Pope Francis, who has remained sadly silent to date, Pope Francis, respectfully, you need to step up your game. You need to initiate still more renewal in the church, especially when it comes to your Roman bureaucracy. And one other thing, I have to agree with my friend Cardinal Tim Dolan. It's time, finally, to open an honest church-wide discussion about mandatory celibacy and the possibility of married clergy. And no, I'm not looking to get married. For the wider church, the path forward is neither simple nor will it be easy. Neither for our church here in Timonium will it be easy. But I can promise you this, it will be simple. it will be entirely simple. It all goes back to that basic question that Jesus asked Peter. Who do you say I am? How we approach this crisis will actually be our answer to that question. For Peter, Jesus was his Lord and Savior as long as things were going great and the sky was blue and the crowds were all cheering, but when it came to face the cross, he walked away. At least initially, he walked away. There are lots of people walking away right now, and I get it. I understand it. Sometimes I feel like joining them too, but I'm not going to do that. And I hope you don't either. This crisis is a cross for us in our church here in Timonium. Not one of our fashioning, not one that we deserve, but one we're asked to carry. How do we do that? Well, we do it by doing exactly what we're already doing. Maybe with increased dedication, maybe a little more humility, but exactly what we're doing. Think about it. A number of years ago, we already recognized the church was in need of renewal and rebuilding. We didn't need this crisis to teach us that. And with that recognition, we as a church here in Timonium set out on a deliberately different path. That decision brought us jeers and sneers and critics and complaints and bullets in the back, but we kept going anyway. And despite all of our mistakes and missteps, despite my own faults and flaws and failures, enormous failures as pastor, God blessed our work. God has abundantly blessed what we are doing here. Nothing could be more obvious. And this blessing comes with a responsibility. Our blessing is to be a blessing for others. Now lots of parishes are waking up to the new reality that if we're going to survive this crisis and thrive beyond it, they're going to have to rebuild too. And increasingly, parishes across the country and around the world are looking to us to help them do it. And we want to help them too. The future of the church will not be shaped by councils in Rome or commissions of cardinals or even prosecutors here in the United States. Rebuilding the church starts at 20 East Ridgely Road. We're going to go right on doing what we do. Love God, love others, make disciples, and help other churches to do the same with Christ as our leader and guide, with Christ as our shepherd and pastor, with Christ and Christ alone as our cornerstone. That's the church that I'm belonging to. That's the church that I'm sticking with. The Church of Christ in Timonium, Maryland.
Thank you for listening to Breadbox Media. Find more about us at breadboxmedia.com.